The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHPC, HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable tonight. We're talking about the big dangerous guns on D.C. streets as well as the Black Lives Matter movement. Where is it right now? My guests are April Rain, managing editor of BroadwayBlack.com and editor-at-large for New Tribe magazine. Also, Hamil Harris with The Washington Post. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ben, hold on. Ben, calling from Prince George's. What's on your mind, Ben?
I just wanted to say that it seems sometimes that we're forgetting that a lot of these guns that are out here, people are using this platform like to blame the NRA or whatever. There's guns out here, and people have them, and people are using them for all kinds of wickedness. And there's no organization that's going to be able to get a grip or control over these guns. So to blame the NRA that they're taking this stance has nothing to do with the cats that are out on the corner that's got their own guns, that are stolen guns. So that's not going to help and resolve it. People need to understand that these guns are out here, and people are using them to do bad things. The second part of it, when they talked about police officers doubling down, it's a term that people are now just creating or bringing up. Actually, it's just two-man patrols that are standard in a lot of major cities. So it's not anything new, anything to combat certain things. It's just there's officer safety, and I guess that they have to put two-man cars out there to be able to patrol the streets and to be have your immediate backup. It's nothing different. So I just wanted to clarify those things.
Well, Ben, thank you so much for your input. Camille, you wanted to make a point. Go ahead.
You know, I just think it's very important for us, a couple things. And tell me if I'm wrong, April. There still seems to be this exclusivity by some in the Black Lives Movement, and that, you know, it's like everybody knows each other on a first-name basis. A lot of, you know, did you tweet me or whatever? And that's, you know, what people do. But then there are thousands of people that really probably want to be engaged. And my question is, how sophisticated is this movement, not just avant-garde, nothing new, to be able to reach out, or even if this is the purpose? Because when you look at the NRA, that's a multi-million dollar organization with a lot of corporations and whatever people. NAACP, SEO, even, you know, and what my concern is, for the last 50 years, we have pressed so hard for public accommodations as well as public elected officials to affect change. That's why we got a black guy in the White House, President Obama. But now moving forward, what is the plan? What is the agenda? And who will orchestrate this other than sound bites and people at a table? And I just wonder about...
Well, let me see if she can address that, Hamil, before you comment further. Go ahead, April, please.
Right. Well, I am not a representative of the Black Lives...
I know you.
So I can't speak for them. So let's be very clear about that. What I can tell you is that it is incredibly organized from what I've seen. And that's why I'm leading everyone to the website so that they can read more about the policy plans that are in place. I understand that there will always be people, for whatever reason, who are not part of the movement. But when you've got thousands of people out on the streets in just a few moments or hours' notice, I think we need to pay homage to the fact that the Black Lives Matter movement is making those significant changes. And again, it can't all be on them reaching out to the community. The community needs to reach back as well. And there are still, let's remember, even when we have the most prominent activists, when they move on to a different city, because unfortunately we're seeing state-sanctioned violence, there are people left behind in every single city who are continuing to organize and mobilize. So seek those people out even after the more prominent ones have moved on.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Gabrizi calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Gabrizi, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go right
good
ahead.
Afternoon.
Hey, how are you? Go right ahead.
Yeah, Yes. Mind you, I've been in this area for the last over a couple of decades, so I've seen all the way from Rodney King beating in the 1990s and all the way to Freddie Gray's death. In general, I'm afraid to say that a lot of people are afraid to deal with the issues that is killing, the killing of many African, thousands of African-American lives, and not doing much about it in general. Number two is that, and also it looks like even the people on the upper echelons, they're not helping the people who are struggling really to echo what is at stake, how much citizens should you lose to understand what is going on the lower strata. So I think instead of creating you know, confusion or criticizing movements like Black Lives Matter, which I'm not a part of, whatever, but at least in word and principle, Black people matter. Sir, can I ask you, do you value this in principle? Do Black people, people's lives matter to you?
Okay.
Question to the people who are in the audience as well. That's a question. I think that the biggest weapon that we have is learning from Gandhi, okay? We have a great deal of economic stake in this country that we can bring about change through economics.
So you're saying that there needs to be a peace movement as it relates to this. Is that
but the thing is that we exhausted all those stuff. The absence of someone not taking accountability. It's like the reason I think this movement was born out of it is that no one cares about this. There was no convictions. There was no accountability. But
Let me stop you there and see if either one of my guests want to briefly comment on it. Go right ahead.
That's a great point. I'm right down here from St. Augustine, Florida, where they had non-violence direct action. Now, what was that? When you had racism, you think you got racism now. You look back at the old Jim Crow laws and stuff like that. And you had places like St. Augustine that was segregated. Blacks could not swim on the beach, couldn't swim in the pool. So they would find places where they had known racists, and what they would respond to that violence of police and stuff like that with nonviolence, with praying and sit-ins and things like that. And when the media came, you had this powerful image of violence beset with people, cross people praying on their knees. That was the brilliance of Dr. King in that movement. But when you talk about...
And they killed him.
Yeah, they killed him. So does that mean it was a failure?
No, that's not what it means. But if you want to talk about praying, let's talk about the nine people in Charleston, South Carolina, who were praying with Dylann Roof before he killed them all.
Okay,
so
right.
We need action. Prayer is great, but prayer without works is dead, right?
I mean, you talk about Dylann Roof, and they killed him, and the nine people died in the church. So the question becomes, Are you saying or suggesting, and I know you're not, maybe not, is that the solution is what?
The solution is continued protests, nonviolent protests, just as Dr. King did. But remember, this is a new generation, so we have new tools at our disposal. So even when we saw the protests in Dallas the other day, that was a nonviolent protest. And it wasn't until afterward that the gentleman, the Army veteran, who was not at all affiliated with Black Lives Matter, it wasn't until afterward that he began shooting the cops, which was unnecessary and unfortunate violence and senseless deaths of those police officers.
Situation. Former Miss Alabama, all she did was somebody said...
Hamil, you stepped on in the middle of that story, and we haven't talked about the woman who was a former Miss Alabama who was in Florida who called the shooter in the Dallas massacre
a martyr.
And she was saying that she didn't feel sorry for the police officers but felt bad because she felt the way that she did. So let's...
And because of that, there is this connection, for good or for bad, where the conservatives, and you watch it, they are somehow connecting a new generation of people who feel the pain, just like I feel the pain, with Black Lives Matter, and it's almost like, isn't it ironic that all of a sudden you don't hear about the terrorists or the people that shot up the Pulse nightclub or other places, but you hear about Black Lives Matter being connected with the police shooting all of a sudden, and it's almost like the new terrorists in America are being considered Black Lives Matter.
Let me bring up a point, because you mentioned the Pulse nightclub, and there has been some discussion about this. And April, I want your opinion about this also. Because after the horrific shooting at the Pulse nightclub, you had millions of people coming out to support the LGBT community, including Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. After last week, we have not heard an outcry as a whole from the LGBT community about Black lives as we have in the reverse. Am I wrong about that? There were concerns about, and we've seen it on social media, Black Lives cares about the LGBT community, but the LGBT community has not raised their voice as loudly as Black Lives Matter has.
Had a march in Boston. I've seen other events where you do see some things. You can find it. But I think it's not just other communities. I think how Black Lives Matter is being portrayed. It's almost like the police all of a sudden, you know, are being, you know, victimized by Black Lives Matter, and not just local. Somebody said local crime. This police situation, policing is on a local level, and every community has its different problems. And all of a sudden now, Black Lives Matter has to defend itself against everything going on in the country. And it's a powder keg.
That's not something that can be blamed on Black Lives Matter.
I agree with you.
I'm not sure what the point is, because that is something that comes from the media and the way that the police put out the information.
Exactly.
So Black Lives Matter shouldn't have to defend itself any time that there's a black person who is in trouble, right? The same way that the SCLC, I mean, you've been wanting to go back to King, so the same way the SCLC and SNCC and the NAACP should not have had to defend themselves every time that a black person did something bad back in the 50s and 60s.
And then for the next 4 days, just watch, April, you will see many people who look like you and myself on television and trashing, you know, what's going on with the protests and talking this another vision. It's called politics between Republicans and Democrats.
But let me stop. But hold on, Hamil. I don't want to talk about Republicans and Democrats. I want to continue to stay on this movement. Because as I said before, whether it's the Pulse nightclub shooting or whether or not it's the blowback, and dare I say, what we're hearing about these talking points mm-hmm. now against Black Lives Matter, is Black Lives Matter being isolated from trying to be isolated from its movement or having its message diluted by those that say blue lives matter, all lives matter, and perhaps people working to reduce the movement's effectiveness?
I April, go first, but I have something to say.
Every time that someone says anything other than Black Lives Matter, they are intentionally diluting what the statement is. So it's not Don Cheadle asked on Twitter today, the famous actor, you know, should it have been Black Lives Matter too, so that people
right.
could understand just because we're saying Black Lives Matter doesn't mean
that everybody else doesn't
exactly.
matter.
Exactly. And yeah. let's also talk about Blue Lives Matter is not a thing. We all woke up as black, right? That was not a choice. Blue Lives Matter means that you have chosen that particular profession to protect and serve. And can we talk a little bit about intersectionality? What about the black police officers? So, you know, why do they have to straddle that fence with respect to black lives or blue lives?
I thought what was very interesting, you just said something, at the Dallas Memorial Service, when police chief, who's being heralded as a hero, after made overture, said he would wish some people that were protesting would join the Dallas Police Department and be part of the solution, and he got a rousing applause for that. I think the issue that all lives matter came from Black Lives Matter, that came from Lives Matter, and I think one of the great achievements of Black Lives Matter, it came up with the idea that life is precious, even more so. And that used to be a term that the conservatives would use in anti-abortion people. So now all of a sudden, life matters. And I think that theme will carry on, like Occupy. When the members of Congress stood in the well a few weeks ago, they said, we're occupying. They never used that term before, it was Occupy Wall Street.
Well, hold that point, Hamil. I've got to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. We'll also talk to William and Alexandria Tony in Bryantown, Maryland, and Trudy calling from D.C. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue at the Reporters Roundtable talking about big dangerous guns on D.C. streets and the Black Lives Matter movement. Back to the phone lines. Tony calling from Bryantown, Maryland. Is that correct, Tony?
That's correct, sir.
Okay, what's on your mind?
What's on my mind here is there's one or two things happening here. We have a serious racial problem in the United States. And on top of that, we have a severe deficiency in police training. Okay? Now, I want to go back a couple of months.
Well, make it quick, Tony. Got a lot of folks on the phone, so please.
Okay. There was an instance a couple of months ago where a bunch of farmers, all white people, with weapons, took a government installation by force.
Right.
They weren't going to let it go, and they were willing to die over this.
Correct.
Now, here we have a situation where the sheriffs and the government authorities disarmed these people peacefully, and nobody was shot and killed. Now, here we have another state, let's say Louisiana, where they saw a gun, they said they saw a gun, they shot this guy and killed him.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pull a gun out of his pocket. Now, you have well over 300 pounds of human mass, two police officers.
Yeah.
Well over 300 pounds.
So make your point, Tony. Make your point, please. I've got a lot of phone calls. Go ahead, quickly.
There's a deficiency in training.
Okay.
They train the people, train the police officers to acclimate to the neighborhoods and disarm and keep life precious, as you guys are saying,
mm-hmm.
not to shoot to kill. And don't profile black people as that we should kill them, but disarm everybody else.
Well, Tony,
deficiency in training.
Well, thank you, Tony. I appreciate that. And certainly that is the big question, April, that has been raised in the Castile shooting about training, particularly if, as his girlfriend said, Diamond Reynolds said, that they said, this is what is going on. We're telling you this so that we don't get hurt and so that you are not uncomfortable. And it still was a deadly disaster.
Right. Well, everything went wrong with the Finaldo Castile shooting, and he did everything that he was supposed to do. He was 100% compliant with the police officer, and he was still killed. I mean, I have a 16-year-old son who has a driver's license and is able to, you know, drive on his own. And we have those conversations at least once a week, what you're supposed to do if you get pulled over. Now, my son is a young driver. He's driving a big SUV that perhaps he doesn't look like he should have or own. There's nothing wrong with our car, no busted taillight, because I make sure of all of that. But just because he's young and maybe nervous, he may act anxious as if there's something wrong, even when there's not. So that's the question. What do we tell our kids? What do we tell our partners when they go out on the street and do everything right and still end up dead?
You know, there's policy that's been in place for decades. I remember it's called Civilian Complaint Review Board.
You can't file a complaint if you're dead.
It happened because you never, you know, on that level. It's funny that they did respond. I feel like I'm defending police. I don't know, but they did respond and say that they did offer medical care because I think Mr. Castile's girlfriend said that, you know, no one offered him CPR and by her daughter in the back seat and things like that. And even the guy went out to say that the chief said, well, we even gave them a teddy bear, you know. And
but what's your point, Hamil? What are you saying?
The point is that they're in a real fumbling, stumbling way. You see this, the police department in Minnesota trying to respond to what happened and in New Orleans at a local level. And the question becomes, historically, these issues have been dealt with police department by police department. And in terms of going forward, the question becomes, is that the only way it's going to change? Because you think this Republican Congress is going to make legislation to give more empowerment to communities? You know, really?
Well, but, you know, one of the issues that was raised on this program just yesterday was that, you know, there is no federal training standard in the United States for police officers. And I don't know whether or not something, you know, like that is possible. But certainly in the wake of all of these shootings of black men specifically, but people in general, by police officers, there does appear to be a need for some wholesale retraining of American police departments.
There definitely needs to be something more with respect to de-escalation. You know, we can go back to Tamir Rice. He was a 12-year-old boy playing alone in the park with a toy gun, and he was dead in less than 2 seconds. There is no reason why those cops could not have given him the benefit of the doubt. With Finaldo Castillo, everything was on videotape. He was saying, he was speaking what he was doing. I am reaching for my license, and he was still killed. That should not have ever escalated to the point where he was killed. Same thing with Sandra Bland. She was smoking her cigarette in her car, and she ended up in jail and then dead a couple of days later. De-escalation needs to be on the front of the minds of these police officers when dealing specifically with Black people, because we see de-escalation. I mean, look at Dylann Roof. After he killed 9 people, and there was no question about whether he did, they took him to Burger King, okay? But when it was Freddie Gray, they put him in the back of a police van with no restraints whatsoever, and he ended up dying. What's the difference there? It's the way that they treat people based on race.
And see, I disagree with Harold. There is a federal standard. It's called the Department of Justice. And I want to know
what are they doing?
I'll make my point.
Quickly, go ahead.
I know they hand down federal guidelines to every law enforcement agency because there is a protocol when you can call in the FBI, call in the ATF, and all this stuff. They just don't magically have automatic weapons. They just didn't get millions of dollars from Congress to have tanks and body armor and stuff that look like something on the X-Men. This was stuff handed down from Washington, D.C.
But it's not handed down from the DOJ. It's handed down from the Pentagon. I mean, this is surplus military equipment that should not be sold to local, you know, local police stations. But that's not DOJ. That's not the Civil Rights Division. That's the Pentagon. So it's difference in agencies.
That's the problem. Everything goes through, if you want accountability, the understaffed, underfunded Civil Rights Division, maligned by Republicans on the Hill, has to try to stand up and make folks accountable when the other departments of this government, from Homeland Security, everything else, they get the carte blanche. And my question is, you can't buy a bicycle without instructions on how to ride a bike. My question is, aren't there instructions in place that should explain to people how to handle this, what will happen? It has to be.
That's my point, because what you were talking about, you mentioned all of these weapons, and those are the last resort things. What April is talking about is training as it relates to de-escalation, because you could argue that Castile was de-escalating before he was killed. And I think that's the point that she's making. Let me go to Trudy. Trudy, calling from D.C.
Yes.
What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is the fact that there are bad seeds in every organization, and mm-hmm. even in the police force. I feel that if there was no retaliation against the fellow officers, the police know firsthand who the racists are. And they know what is going on in their streets. And if there was no retaliation, we could get rid of those people affiliated with the KKK or that are racist and that should not be in our community. And I also like to say, if Black lives matter, our Black young men and women need to change. They have to go back to the grassroots. They have to learn how to love themselves, then love each other, and then love the elderly and love our community. We got to stop killing each other.
Okay. Trudy, thank you so much. I appreciate it. William, calling from Alexandria. What's on your mind?
I want to discuss the same issue, and I'm going to try to be as brief as possible. The first thing we have to do about this situation, you have to deal with the situation. You have to recognize the situation. If we keep putting out, the country's in denial. Part of the country's in denial. They don't want to admit there is a problem, and the problem is domestic terrorism in this country. You got to put that label. You got to put some label on it so you can deal with it accordingly. Once you do that, once you deal with that situation, you say it's domestic terrorism. Now, you got to present that to the President of the United States, the Attorney General, and let them know this is what we're dealing with, okay? And if you do that, now action has to take place. If you take action, then you got to start with the police commissioners, the police captains, and the police officers. meaning that you got to do thorough background checks on all these individuals. Okay. And when you do a background check, I guarantee you, if you do a background check on every one of these officers that actually killed black people in America, I guarantee you, you'll find a connection to a terrorist group, a white supremacist group.
William, I'm going to just let you go on that one. The only thing I can say about that, and we've discussed this on this program before, is that new officers, the recruitment processes, there may be a need for a change in how officers are screened, whether it's psychological profile, social profiling, you know, and the like. And one thing I will say is that if you are inside an organization and there are bad seeds inside the organization, for example, if there are racist cops or there are prejudices, yes, those cops of goodwill, they know. But one of the things, April, that I did notice over the past week or so, because there have been so many interviews with chiefs of police, there has to be a growing number of black chiefs of police in this country, and maybe even in some small way, even, you know, the David Browns of the world in the Dallas Police Department may be able to affect some kind of change even in the wake of these tragedies.
I think that's right. You know, we have to be careful because, as they say, all skin folk ain't kinfolk, mm-hmm. right? So just because they're at the top of the food chain doesn't necessarily mean that they appreciate that there may be problems within their system. And then once you get inside, it's always difficult, you know, to buck the status quo a little bit and make the changes. But I hope that they are being more responsible and that they have the support to do that. Let's also remember, though, that just because you're the police chief doesn't mean that you can make changes carte blanche. You very often also have to go through the police unions, and they are very strong in protecting their officers, as they should be. But because of that, sometimes it means the necessary changes cannot occur.
Well, I think I'll let that be the last word. April Rain, Hamil Harris, thank you both for participating in the Reporters Roundtable. I really appreciate it. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, July 13th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher at whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, or Twitter at Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2.